This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. And the world can't erase his
fantasies. Take a ride in the sky. Maryville is coached by Mark Stricker. They're one of our sponsors. Their Digital World program provides students with free iPads loaded with textbooks and more than 150 apps. The program is designed to engage students as critical thinkers. Go to maryville.edu. You know, if you're at that level like Mark is, you just got to have a pulse for any unhappy Division I players. Mm-hmm. And, hey, I hear this guy's on the 11th guy on the team, and we know he was a really good high school player. I wonder if he'd be interested in coming back. And, boy, Mark does a great job at that.
He's doing that, right?
I mean, yeah.
You have to have your kind of ear to the ground. You got to be connected to the AAU programs, and you got to get – word, kind of the word on the street. But I mean, that the best Division II programs are built on that, D1 transfers.
Now, let's just say money were not an object and you could make the same amount of money and have the same job security you have right now. Would you prefer to wake up every day and have a team?
That's a good question.
And be a coach.
Coach a team?
Yes.
No. Absolutely not.
Yeah,
Well, you had to have considered it with all your buddies doing it. In fact, you looked at a job once, right?
Yeah, I considered it. I thought about it. But it was really more of a function of, you know, I was at a point in my life really where I was looking for something to do. So my playing career was over and I wasn't sure which direction I was going to go. So I just needed a job, frankly. And
So could you have been a grad assistant in Kansas, or what was the job?
I actually interviewed and for the head job at Lindenwood, believe it or not.
Really?
I was probably 25, and I had Coach Williams call, and it just sort of didn't work out. And I can't remember exactly the details, but that wasn't
the Soderberg hire. No,
no, no, that was
somebody
even
else.
Before that. But I considered it, and as it turned out, you know, actually, it's one of those things where. You know, thank God that didn't happen, because I'm kind of with Scott. I'm not sure that's a lifestyle or a career path that I would have really enjoyed.
But the high of a 7 o'clock, you know, packed house, beating an arch rival, the whole town into it.
Pretty good, yeah. I mean, I, again, though, it goes back to temperament, and I always go back to what I've become friendly with Bill Self. And Coach Self always said when he took the Kansas job, his dad challenged him to say, the only reason you're not thinking about taking this job is because you're worried about living up to Roy Williams. And it's really an attitude about toughness. And I don't – like, these guys are so tough. Like, the grind that Scott was talking about with Quanzo Martin, year in, year out, day after day recruiting. And – I don't know if that's a lifestyle. Like, I was starting when I was playing, that was sort of a lifestyle that I was started moving away from. I don't know. It's a grind.
Yeah. Charlie Spinauer talked me out of it in like 5 minutes in March of my senior year.
Oh, you actually thought about it for a second?
I sat down with him and, you know, he said, you know, you can come be a grad assistant because I was going to get my MBA at SLU. And he said, he goes, Scott, I know you. I know you, what you want out of life. And he's like, you know, you see what I'm doing now, but what you don't see is I was coaching at Rogers, Arkansas,
right,
and Moberly. And he starts naming all these coaches and prisons. And he's like, it took me 30 years to get a Division I job. He goes, and I was really lucky to get that job. And he said, it cost my family a lot.
Right.
And he's like, I don't think that knowing you and what you value, this is going to be a lifestyle that you're going to want to pursue.
I always wanted to live in St. Louis, right? And I knew that the coaching, if I had decided to go to coaching, then that meant potentially I would end up in New Mexico or South Florida or, you know, Montana or something, because you just go where the next job is that you think will kind of propel your career until you get the big job. And then at that big job, if you're great, maybe you can be there forever. And if not, you've got 2 or 3 years to really prove to yourself.
I just
wasn't willing to kind of roll the dice on that.
Even if you got the job, I used to talk to Greg Lackey, who was one of Spoon's top assistants.
Yeah.
And he said, Larry Brown had it figured out. He said, you get a job. If you're lucky enough to get a job, you get a job. Then you have about a 2 to 3 year honeymoon period. Then you by year three, you need to get it going. By year 5 or 6, he said, the posse starts to form because you've made some enemies there. And he goes, and by year 6 or 7, you need to start looking for your next job. And he said, that is the path, and it's only going to quicken. The pace of that's going to only quicken. And I thought, that is terrifying.
Yeah,
think
right.
About that.
So and, with that enormous pressure on these guys, you saw volcanic eruptions probably in practice from time to time. Particularly, you didn't see Self, but they his are legendary. But what about Roy when the pressure was really at him? If he'd lose a couple of games, just how emotional was that?
Really emotional. It was... Like when you would lose a game, or really even when you would win a game but didn't play great, it was not a fun. Basketball in high school for me was so fun, and then I got to college, and although it was big time, I really enjoyed it, and some of the incredible atmospheres and wins that we had, it wasn't as fun because there was so much sort of pressure, and or at times he made it, frankly, a little miserable.
So even though you were a 1,000-point scorer and you won big games. How about at its nastiest and worst?
Well,
what do you remember?
In 97, we were the number one team in the country the entire year. Mizzou beat us at Mizzou. We talked about Corey Tate. He made the big shot in overtime to beat us. We went into the NCAA tournament with only one loss. We lost to Mizzou, in fact, I think it was a big Monday night. And that next Monday when the rankings came out, we were still number one. So that just shows you how good that 97 team was. But that entire year, there were nights where we won games pretty handily, but Coach Williams would think that we didn't play up to par. And, you know, he made it pretty, you know, living hell, frankly, at times.
What
just
would he say to you? You're an innocent young man.
Yeah.
He did all the right things.
It was never really, you know, he was really good about not isolating individual players. Like, he was never somebody that would go right at it. It was really more about a team. But in practice, he was definitely harder on guys at certain times. And, yeah, he was really hard on me like my junior year. It wasn't so much my sophomore year. It was my junior year. He was really hard on me.
How about Spoon? I imagine he got tough, but there was something so funny about him, it could never be like a hideous atmosphere, right?
Well, I mean, I love Spoon. He was a lot of fun. And I played for Rich Grauer my freshman year, and he was great too. But I remember sitting in class most days in college, sick to my stomach, thinking about practice. Like, literally sick to my stomach, so worried about practice and the intensity and is it going to go okay and how am I going to play and the pressure. And you think about high school was just fun. Never, I mean, I couldn't wait for a practice.
Right.
But in college, I was literally physically sick to my stomach most days. But now Spoon was like – shrewdly smart, right? So like on days we would play a game and we would play well, and he would absolutely kill us the next day in practice to make sure that we were not getting a big head. And on days we'd play poorly in a game, he'd come out and we'd play wiffle ball or something like that. So he would always do the opposite of what you expected as a player. And it was never personal.
He literally played wiffle ball.
A couple
in
days,
West Pine.
We played wiffle ball inside West Pine. And so he would kind of do the opposite of what you would think, oh, coach is going to kill us today. And he would lighten the mood. And we would so it was a little bit of like behavior psychology, which I appreciate more now than I did then. But believe me, I was sick to my stomach every day thinking about practice.
I struggle with myself and my kids because I think to myself, going to what Scott said, every single day at practice I was challenged. Physically and mentally every day for 4 years challenged. And although today I know that that has made me stronger and better at my job and I'm better for it, I sometimes think to myself, do I want to put my kids through that? Now, would they be better for it? Would it probably be great for them? It would. But then I also know the sacrifice and sort of the toughness it takes to do that. So it's challenged every single day.
Barry Hinson has the line, parents are now not comfortable in making their kids uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So,
but you realize that it's their life.
So I'm a bad parent? Is that what you just said?
Well,
I mean, that's sort of reading between the lines.
That's what Barry said.
But when you think about it, like, that's their livelihood. That's what how they get paid based on 18 to 22-year-old kids. So it's serious stuff. It may just be fun for us, but it's not fun for the coach. The coach is like, I got a 3-year contract, and I've got kids, and I'm trying to raise a family. So this is serious. And so that you feel that as a player.
How about something fun, though, that Spoonhauer would say to you or – because I think people are shocked that you saying that you're uncomfortable in class thinking about it. And this is Spoon, the wisecracking, fun old guy.
Oh my goodness.
But he would say funny things.
Spoon would say, I would be running up and down the court, and I would see our assistants in the middle of the game laughing because he would say something funny. I mean, some of it I can't repeat, but it had a lot to do with, we had a kid named Carlos McCauley, and he was from Charleston, Missouri.
Could not shoot, right?
Apparently they couldn't shoot, but he could play defense, and they would... he would always talk about goats in from Charleston and what he was going to do with a goat from Charleston relative to Carlos. That was kind of the running joke with Spoon, but Spoon was great. I mean, it was serious. Yes, I was sick to my stomach, but at the end of the day, if I went 1 for 15, I knew that he still loved me, and he knew I wasn't trying to do it on purpose, and I appreciated that about him a lot.
How about Roy and Norm? How would you characterize that?
I think there was a healthy amount of respect, but there was clearly a dislike. You know, like
real dislike.
Yeah, I mean, now they could probably get together and laugh. And I know Coach Williams has been a big advocate of coaches versus cancer, which Coach Stewart has been the lead on. So I'm sure now it's a lot more friendly. But you know, going back to what Scott just said, like these guys are battling for their livelihood and families. And so if you have an arch rival in Missouri and right across the river is Kansas, it's difficult to be buddy-buddy in that scenario. Like, I know Coach Self in Kansas State, Bruce Weber, right? They've had clashes all the way back to Illinois. They didn't really like each other. So it's now, because they're sort of – K-State's good this year. So it's hard to be buddy-buddy when you're fighting for a livelihood and putting food on the table with your family until – time has passed and you're kind of separated from
that. To that point, it literally is a zero-sum game. You win, I lose.
Yeah.
And it goes with recruiting. It goes on the court. It's if you're winning and I'm losing, then my livelihood's at stake. So it raises the stakes for everybody.
I sometimes think that one of the good stories that I would love to hear is the recruiting stories of players that were lost. I would love to hear Self, Williams, Patino, Izzo, talk about the players that they thought they had, like big name players, like right on their doorstep, that all of a sudden didn't go their way. And you start to think about it, well, how close was Zion Williamson from going to Kentucky? Right. You know, like those to me are interesting sort of that you don't really think about, because once you get to Duke or once you get to Kentucky, it's sort of you're forgotten about all those other relationships that you had.
All right, so even though you're 1,000-point scorers and great players in the history of your respective programs, neither of you, I think, were lockdown defenders. Who would be a couple of guys that you were on the court with, boy, I cannot guard this human being?
Well, I got caught on a switch one time, a couple times, not part of the game plan, on Nick Van Exel, and I had nothing to do. I just started backpedaling as quickly as I could. And I actually did have to, just because of the matchups, I had to guard Penny Hardaway quite a bit, and that was a terrible matchup. And he just went straight to the post. I had nothing.
Oh, he got on the post. Okay, Van Exel went around you.
Van Exel went around me, and Hardaway went to the post. So
I think I was a senior at the arena and went to see Memphis State and SLU. Yeah. I was behind the bench and watched that game, being recruited by SLU. Mine would be Steph Marbury. We played them in the shootout, the old Coca-Cola shootout in the arena. Actually, that might have been at Scott Trade now or whatever we call it. But it was Steph Marbury. He was just it was a different level. He was an electric quickness that I had not seen before.
Yeah, he should have had a great NBA career.
He was an all-star a couple of times, but he just sort of fizzled out, I think. But then he went to China and became a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Van Exel with the ball, gosh, he was good.
Tricky Nick, as they call him. He was as shifty and could shake you like nobody else. I saw some old videos the other day. Somebody posted on Twitter of just how shifty he was. He's 6'1", about 170. Incredibly shifty. Yeah. He got that whole thing at Cincinnati going for Huggins.
Mm-hmm. All right, so how are you both spending your lives now? And tell us a little bit about your jobs.
So I left Goldman Sachs about a year ago. I run national sales for a small boutique firm in Philadelphia called FS Investments, and really have enjoyed it and spend a lot of time on the road now. But as I said, it's in Philadelphia, so I also spend a lot of time there, and then have the three kids here, and Andrea, my wife, and those three kids will end up at Westminster.
How about it, Scott?
Yeah, so I've been in the wealth management business since I graduated in 1995, and now we have a firm called Mosaic Family Wealth and do private wealth management for families, and we've got 17 employees, an office in Denver, so that keeps me plenty busy. And also have three kids, and two of them are at Westminster. One's at Kirk Day School, and my wife, Lindsay, and they keep us on the run for sure.
And if you were both to go to the free throw line right now and shoot 100, and you're loose, warmed up, how many would you make?
85. Mm.
I'd take Ryan in that battle, but
well, it's not a competition.
No, but everything's a competition. How many? I would take you. I think north of 80. I don't know about 85.
Yeah.
If it's a girls' ball, maybe 85 because I shoot a lot of girls' balls.
Yeah, you know when I was coaching Brooke, I was a much better shooter with that girls' ball.
It's a little smaller. It makes my hand better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Guys, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. With you. Merry Christmas.
All right, Ryan Robertson, Scott Highmark, joining us. Still the con. Roger Leip runs FCA at SIU Carbondale, and Floyd and Tony Irons. We'll take a break. We're coming right back.